Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Welcome back to Chicago's Afternoon News right here on 720 WGN. My name is Eric Rung, filling in for Steve Bertrand. And this is, of course, the last Thursday of the month. And on the last Thursday of the month, we like to celebrate your hometown. And today we are taking you to Geneva and to the Fabian Villa and Gardens. And to help us take you there, we have Vivian Laskin, who is the director of the Museum and Gardens there. Vivian, thanks so much for joining us on Chicago's Afternoon News.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
So tell us about this villa. What makes it so special?
So the Fabian Villa was purchased by Colonel George Fabian and his wife, Nell, in 1905. And then they had it renovated by Frank Lloyd Wright in 1907. So the building that is standing on the Fabian Forest Preserve property is a Frank Lloyd Wright renovation that was done in 1907. So that's part of its claim to fame. Colonel George Fabian was a wealthy businessman, and he invested in the area. He built laboratory buildings across the street where they did code breaking during World War One, which was a huge.
I can't wait to get into that because I've read so much about it, and I just love. But keep telling me about the house for now.
Sure. So the villa itself, like I said, was a Frank Lloyd Wright remodel. The Fabians, Colonel George Fabian, originally came from Boston from a really wealthy family. They made, they were the Fabians of Bliss Fabian and Company, who made riplet fabric, which is kind of like seersucker, which was really, really popular at the turn of the century because it was lightweight and it didn't need to be ironed. Ironing is terrible now. It was worse in 1900. And that's sort of what made the family fortune. When his father passed away in 1905, Colonel George Fabian inherited a few million dollars from his father's legacy, and that enabled the purchase of the property. They owned about 350 acres of land on both sides of the Fox River. When they passed away, they never had any children, so the property got sold off. The Forest Preserve bought it, and it became the Fabian Forest Preserve, as you see it today. About 200 acres did.
You know, and I'm looking through some of the descriptions here. It kind of reminds me of the Hearst Castle out in California as well. I mean, it had a private zoo, a lighthouse, a boathouse, Roman-style swimming pools. And you can take a tour of this, and you guys are reopening here on Sunday. What can you expect once you get a ticket to go in and see this villa? I mean, do you get to go all over the place?
Yeah, so we're reopening. The Hearst Castle is actually a really good comparison. There's a lot. They were really eccentric people. They had a lot of interesting hobbies, like you mentioned, the zoo. They had pet alligators. They had pet bears. They have a mummy that still lives in the villa. I tuck it into bed every night before I leave for the day.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? Tuck it into bed?
Yeah, the mummy has to get tucked into bed. It's really light sensitive, so it has to get covered with a sheet before I leave for the day.
I see. So when you get the tour, you get to see where all of this took place, all of the, I guess, the zoo where they kept the animals, where the mummy is, and all the pools and gardens and everything?
Mm-hmm. So the Fabian Forest Preserve is open to the public year-round, the outside portion of it is. When you come for a tour of the villa, it's a 45-minute guided tour of the house. Due to COVID restrictions, we're limiting our tours to 10 people at a time. Masks are required. Social distancing is required within the house. And that tour goes through basically every room of the villa. So we'll talk about the Fabians, their life history, their legacy. You get to see a statue that was on display at the 1893 Chicago World's Fair that the Fabians purchased, the mummy, their taxidermy collection, their Japanese and Chinese artifacts, a 300-plus-year-old samurai suit. There's lots of very cool things within the villa that you get to see as part of that tour experience.
Man, seersucker really goes a long ways.
Yeah, that was it was quite a bit of money back in 1900.
So let's get back to the laboratories and mm-hmm. some of the code breaking that was done there. One of the most prolific code breakers in American history was working there. Can you tell us a little bit about that history?
Yes, the colonel was really, he believed it was his job as a wealthy gentleman to pick up where the universities leave off. His words, not mine. As far as funding scientific research. So he built these laboratory buildings across the street from his home, and then he hired researchers to come work at them doing various projects. There was an acoustics laboratory. They worked on early X-rays and pulley systems, things like that. But the biggest project they worked on was this code-breaking research. He got into that because the colonel was really into this idea that Sir Francis Bacon had written the Shakespeare plays, which is a largely debunked theory now.
Sure.
But he hired researchers to come examine the original works of Shakespeare looking for secret coded messages saying that Sir Francis Bacon had written them. Their research was inconclusive, but it did mean that when World War I broke out, he had this already sort of prepared team ready to go. They collaborated with the United States government. They sent young men in the military to Riverbank to train with Elizabeth Smith Freedman and her husband William Freedman, who were the people heading up that project. And they sort of pioneered American code breaking in a lot of ways. That became really important in World War I in a way that it hadn't been before because it was so closely following the invention of radio.
And I saw that most of her work had to do with, like, prohibition and smuggling and things mm-hmm. like that, and then moved on to really helping the war effort.
Mm-hmm. So she got her start during World War I doing code breaking. So you're looking at the 19-teens, right? And then after her time at Fabian, her and her husband continued doing code-breaking research for the rest of their lives. They went to Washington, D.C., where she worked on, you know, prohibition and smugglers, like you said, and then were used in, they helped break the Japanese code purple during World War II. So sort of their whole lives, they were deeply involved in code-breaking and code-breaking research.
And it really, it stopped, from what I've read, stopped the Nazis in South America as well. At one point, they were trying to start some, I guess they were trying to overthrow the government in a couple of the countries there. Is it a little bit about that and how the Nazis were stopped from doing that?
That's a little bit beyond her time at Riverbank specifically. I know that that's covered in the book, The Woman Who Smashed Codes by John Fagone. He talks about that more, but I don't know all the details on sort of what she did after Riverbank.
Well, we'll try and decode it for our listeners at some point here. But getting back to the villa itself, mm-hmm. if people do want to go, how do they find out how to get tickets and how to see the villa?
Sure. We are open this summer. From May to September, we are going to be open on Wednesdays and Sundays from 1 to 4 p.m. We give tours of the Fabian Villa on the hour and a half hour from 1 to 4, so our last tour leaves at 3:30. And they are first come, first serve, so people can just show up at the villa. They may have to wait, you know, up to 30 minutes for the next tour, depending on how busy we are. And then we are happy to take them through the house.
And then it is the Japanese based, gardens as so, well?
Yep, the Japanese garden will be open the same hours because it's outside. We're a little less limited as far as how many people can go through. But we are still asking that people wear masks just for everybody's comfort.
And because we are celebrating Geneva here, mm-hmm. what is some of your favorite places and things to do in Geneva when you're not at the villa?
I spend so much time at the villa.
That's just kind of fun to say, too. I spend so much time at the villa.
It sounds very fancy, right?
Very
fancy. I'm doing a lot of, like, sweeping and mopping most of the time. It's not nearly as glamorous as it sounds. I really like the Fabian Windmill. I'm not sure what hours they're going to be open yet because they're scheduled through the Forest Preserve. But that's a neat historic site. And then I like Bien Trucha if you're looking for restaurants. That's my favorite.
All right. Well, one more time, give the website so people know where to find you.
Sure. You can find out more information about when we're open and how to come on a tour and anything like that. You can contact us. Our website is ppfv.org. So that's PPFV for Preservation Partners of the Fox Valley, .org.
All right. Vivian Laskin, the director of the Fabian Villa Museum and Japanese Garden in Geneva. Thank you so much for joining us here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
All right. I can't wait to get out there and see this. It sounds exciting.
Yeah, it's a great time. We're looking forward to having you.
All right. Thanks, Vivian. All right. Up next, Blackhawks hockey.